in the absence of foreign capital, we borrow money. Our debt, you know, it's like our biggest industry in South Africa. On a retail level, on an industrial level, on a government level, what's the biggest item we manage in our income statement? Not growth, not revenue, debt, interest.
Mark, hi, good morning, how are you?
Good morning, it's January.
Yes.
And I'm not that worried, but there's lots happening, huh? There's the matric results, there's the ANC statement, there's the new year. What's news, Tim? Come on, you're the journalist in this team.
Well, listen, I want to know this, and it's a crucial issue.
No.
What is your feeling about yachts? I mean, do you like yachts? Do you have a yacht? Do you go on yachts?
No, I don't go on yachts. Because, you know, a friend of mine's father had a yacht, and we sailed, in inverted commas, all the way from Saldanha Bay to Cape Town, but there was no wind. Okay. So there's another sailing term which people don't, sailors never talk about. We dieseled all the way from Saldanha Bay to town, which was added to the seasickness. No, and I've been to Monte Carlo where the yachts abound, and we've got Russian yachts. I know nothing about yachts, okay? They're to be seen from a distance, and I've never been on anything fancy. But others have, it seems to me.
Yes, it turns out. I mean, my feeling on yachts is that they don't stand still. It's kind of slightly disconcerting.
Yeah.
Because you get on,
yeah,
and the whole thing moves. I mean, they don't tell you that.
You can end up drinking much less because when you get on, you're already feeling amongst it. You know, you already got a bit of a move going. Yeah.
Anyway, the point of this conversation is because Fikile Mbalula, the Secretary General of the ANC, took a luxury yacht, this is how it's described in the media, to Robben Island of all places, you know, the holy of holies in South Africa. So now, in his defense, he says that he didn't organize his own transport. He isn't the person who organizes his own transport.
Sure. No, I wasn't even there, man.
Yeah, I wasn't even there. Yes.
What money under the wheel? What? No, man. It's not mine.
But the yacht is owned by a friend of his. So that sort of suggests that maybe he did sort of know about it.
I tell you what happened. I think this is what happened. He got to the ferry.
Right.
And they were like, oops, sorry, full up. Okay. And he said, well, is there any other plan I can make? Because I don't do my own drawing. And they said, get on that boat over there. Okay. And that's how it happened, I think.
Okay.
I don't really have a major problem with you getting on a friend's yacht. The problem I have.
You don't?
No, I don't. The problem I have is whether it's a quid pro quo, whether it's.
Right.
Because of some other thing. Now, apparently, this chap who owns this yacht has got fabulous multimillion, or reportedly fabulous multimillion government contracts. And, you know, if there's a quid pro quo, then it's completely criminal. If it's a declared, which it didn't hide about it, you know. I remember sitting as the chairman of the Futures Exchange, and every now and again, someone would want to accuse themselves because they were involved in the JSE or we were discussing a product that was in their bank or something. And I go, sorry, guys, but on my board, nobody recuses themselves. You come here as a board member with integrity and you should be able to pass judgment independently in your mind. So, you know, I'm not for this. The way you get around corruption is to avoid obvious. No. The question is it a quid pro quo or not?
That's right. It is extraordinary how a small incident like this can completely obliterate, you know, the larger kind of political significance that's going on in the background. Actually, because what happened was that ANC makes the statement every year on January the 8th,
their birthday,
memorial of its creation, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. And this one was kind of unusual, was a little bit unusual because, you know, often these statements are kind of blah, 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 blah. And, you know, nobody gives much attention to them because they were all on holiday in the process, you know, prior to and then they have to come back to work and rush together and get it done. But this one was a little bit different, I would say. It's interesting.
Well, it was in a more compact venue, shall we start there?
Yes.
Apparently, the Stormers got precedence over the main stadium in Cape Town and various others, which... You know, I guess that's just how it is, eh? If you don't book, you can't kick the bloody rugby team off. But what would your take then on the statement?
I thought it was kind of realistic, but you know, this is a Cyril Ramaphosa for you. I mean, he's just, you know, I think he's really smart and he's kind of honest in his assessment. You know, he said, for example, that the ANC was a living organism that has developed and matured over almost a century under different conditions, constantly adapting as the phases of struggle have changed. So, you know, that's true and good. You know, it's nice that he sort of recognizes that the ANC needs to change.
Yeah.
But we would like to see that more of that in the action stage, as we've mentioned a zillion times.
Well, I distinguish between adapting to the circumstances and changing their progression. You know, there's a difference in saying, whatever happens on this boat, we're gonna patch it up. Okay, but the question is there ever any a case for changing course? Because, at some point you go like, we're not going to just go down this road of ruin and adapt to it and change our popularity and change our coalitions and change our all sorts of things to adapt to our, we're going to change the direction that the country's going, and that's going to have a consequence much greater. And I think that's my issue.
Yeah. It's the difference between being passive and active.
Yeah.
Actively choosing a course that you've actively sought to understand and implement, you know, and just on that topic, it's quite interesting. The latest Economist magazine, you know, I'm a regular reader of The Economist. I love The Economist. It's just fantastic. They have a very good ethic, as far as I'm concerned, a very good journalistic ethic, where you're not allowed to sit on the fence.
No, that's a great idea. They're not taking you to the World Economic Forum, are they, after all that praise? I mean, you're not on their yacht, are you? Yeah, okay.
It is very easy to sit on the fence. There's an old journalistic joke that the way to end a commentary piece is always using the words, whether this is true or not, only time will tell.
There's a bit of a truth. There's a bit of a foundation to life, right? Yeah.
And actually, I read something, you wrote something that said exactly that. Anyway, well, what they said was, so they've done this cover story on Africa. They do a cover story on Africa basically once a decade.
Wow. That must change from time. It must be interesting to juxtaposition one decade to the next. I don't know if you've ever done that. Yeah.
Exactly. No. And oddly enough, I can do that because every time they have a cover on Africa, I think, oh my God, this is going to be terrible. Because the one that they did, you remember there was a cover saying, Africa, the hopeless continent.
I don't remember, but yeah.
So it was exactly at that moment that the entire continent turned around.
Okay.
And then they had another cover which said, Africa rising. This is a decade later.
And exactly at that moment.
And it was at exactly that moment.
So a contraindicator on Economist.
The latest one I really like, and they were basically saying, Africa needs more capitalism. Just needs more capitalism. You know, that would be an active choice. If Ramaphosa had said, you know what, we're short here. We need more big companies. And they did a survey of, you know, regions of the world, how many big companies there are in each region. And there's too few big companies in Africa. It's just an interesting point.
We have all sorts of taxes by whatever name.
Okay. Right.
And inhibitors by whatever name.
Yes.
That do quite the opposite of attracting capital. You know, and there are small countries in the world, or relatively small countries in the world, which are perhaps populous but not gifted resources and so on, who make themselves a capital destination per force, as it were. Okay, they go like, we're going to have the lowest tax rate, we're going to have no tariffs, we're going to have all of these things, we're not going to have prescribed shareholdings, we're not going to have... And obviously, that attracts capital. Capital has got choice. Capital goes where it's welcome and where the risk-return equation makes sense. It would be kind of a fundamental departure, would it not, from some of the policies, the ideologies that we have in charge of our country?
No, exactly. This is why I'm positive about the idea of adaptation, because I like the idea of an organization that is actively thinking about changing. But as you say, it would be nice if they actually do the change.
One of the things that I foresee in the future is this absence of cohesion, okay, this absence of common purpose. And so in the absence of common purpose, which needs to manifest in mandates, which in turn need to have sufficient votes so that they're not questioned or overturned or voted against every so often, for you to actually do something, it takes time to implement a proper long-term strategy. Like it takes 10 years.
Yeah.
If you've got changing governments every 4 or 5 years, and if you've got changes within government every now and again, then it's very difficult to nail a proper long-term strategy and stick to your guns, so to speak. Yeah. Well, we need that. We need that kind of stability. And if anything, we're going the opposite direction, it seems to me, fractious-wise. It seems to me that we're going to see more political parties, not less. You're going to see less cohesion, more quibbles.
Well, you know, one of the interesting things about the ANC's conference this time was that SACP have decided to stand on their own, you know, to stand independently.
Case in point. Yeah.
The head of the SACP was booed when he made this announcement or, you know, repeated this announcement at the ANC's, you know, function. But I quite like it. I mean, I'd be quite interested to know how many people actually support the SACP independently of those who support the ANC.
Of the alliance, yeah.
Yeah. It's not necessarily negative for the ANC that, you know, factions within it, you know, test their own kind of support. Because if they're in alliance, they still vote the same way when it comes to the...
Yeah, as long as it's not simply a perpetual sort of inter-party contest. As long as the fight is about what we're going to do, not whether you're in my team or not. Okay, so, you know, I think we've got to choose a Springbok side out of all of the teams, okay? Instead of, you know, choosing four national sides, which would never win any tournament. Yes. Okay, we need to get together a national team to run the country. And that national team, by definition, is going to be comprised of different members of different clubs with different coaches and different styles that come together on the basis of their relative and contributory merits. And until we get to that place, yes. I mean, if you look at supply and demand generally of skills versus deployment, I was reading again today that there are so many qualified doctors that can't get jobs in our hospitals, which in the main, it seems to me, have a shortage of medical skills. You struggle to see a doctor. How do you reconcile that, Tim? What's wrong? It's an absence of a cohesive strategy.
Yes, exactly. I mean, isn't it just the absence of a cohesive budget? If you have a sort of growing population and your tax income is not growing at the speed that your population is growing, you just run out of money. I mean, that's the constraint, isn't it? It's not the desire or the need for doctors. We need them. We want them. We're creating them, but we just can't pay them.
You get back to what you said in the beginning about inflows of capital. Let me say this, as I've said it so often, we will not solve South Africa's principal problems without an inflow of significant foreign capital. We don't generate sufficient capital ourselves. It is singularly the biggest achievement that we would, if we had, you know, foreign direct investment, if they built dams that they can't sell the next morning, if they built firms and all sorts of other things, and we became global players in selected industries and so on and so on and so on. We are not generating sufficient capital. And by the way, in the absence of foreign capital, we borrow money. Okay.
Yes.
And our debt is just, you know, it's like our biggest industry in South Africa on a retail level, on an industrial level, on a corporate, on a company level, I mean, on a government level. What's the biggest item we manage in our income statement? Not growth, not revenue, debt, interest.
Yeah, debt.
So we need to become attractive. Yeah. Let's cheer up, for God's sake, man. It's enough.
Can we just talk very briefly about international affairs? Because, you know, I've always had this. It's always been sort of pressed on my sense of justice and injustice, or particularly that the ocean next to us, next to us here in Africa, is called the Indian Ocean. How can that be? How can that be? Why is it not called the African Ocean?
I don't know. I mean, but up to you. Someone once told me, you got to kind of pick your fights. Okay, I mean, I'm not going into the street with a banner which says, call it the African Ocean. I'm not going there, okay? Because I don't know. I don't know what happened. I wasn't there, and that's it. Okay, I don't know. You go for it, Tim. Go.
Well,
isn't it also next to India? Hey, isn't India on that side?
Yeah. Oh, you know.
Hey? No, we don't want to start a war. We don't want to start a war. What about the Pacific Ocean? Is that one sort of neutral, is it?
Well, it's from, you know, pacify, and so presumably it's peaceful ocean.
And Atlantic, what is its source or origin or political alliance?
But that's a good question. I don't actually know that. What I do know is the Gulf of Mexico is about to be called the Gulf of America.
Or many other gulfs and canals and islands continents. If the new president-elect has his way. Like, what is your take on Greenland? Now, I saw somewhere that Greenland, one of its virtues, is the home place has only got two robots. Okay. The whole of Greenland, and they're all in the one city called Nuut or something like that. But the strategy behind wanting to annex Greenland is nuclear power. Yes. Okay. And someone did a summary, which was way above my game, about, you know, the nuclear defense systems and this and that and Europe gathering and Russia and all that sort of thing. And so Greenland is where the West want to build their nuclear capacity or defense systems and so on. So, and I've also heard, Tim, that the entire population of Greenland could fit into the Loftus Versfeld rugby stadium. So it can't be too difficult to get the Oaks together and cut a deal. Okay. Because I've also heard that the residents said, how much are you going to pay? Now, they've crossed, you know, national's concern into, you know, what's the price? How much you got? You know, so I don't know, the Panama Canal and Europe, and I don't know. I'm sorry. This is going to be the first 100 days.
So obviously there's been calculations being thrown around for how much Greenland is actually worth, because as you know, America paid $100 million for Alaska. Yes. So if you just extrapolate by size and population, you get to roughly, apparently, I don't know whether this is true or not, but net present value of Greenland is around about $1 million per person.
Yeah, I'll buy it at that price.
So here's the question. If somebody said to you,
yeah, mine,
you'll buy it at that price.
I'll find the fucking man.
I would sell at that price. Wouldn't you sell at that price?
No, it's 57 billion rand. Elon Musk will buy it on Wednesday morning over breakfast. Okay. Yes. It's like he's now worth $420 billion or whatever the number is. And so that's not a price, you know, location, location, location to, when you buy any property. Okay. And who doesn't want to? The only thing I wouldn't do is go into the sun tanning cream industry in Greenland. There's not a lot going on there, okay, in terms of getting out on the beach.
I mean, one advantage that nobody is even thinking about is that they could change the name of Greenland, which is not, in fact, green. It's mostly white because of the snow situation.
I don't know what got into you this morning. You want to change oceans to sort of the continent reference. You want to bring the question of color into Greenland. You need to go back and start again. We are going to get into more trouble than I can imagine for your new ambition. Thank goodness you're not in charge. You know, the Karoo. What would you rename the Karoo, for example?
I think the Karoo's got a wonderful name.
Anyway, there's been all sorts of climate stuff. We haven't got time for it today, but, you know, our maize production in South Africa was, for white maize, down 30%. And for yellow maize, down 15%. That's big numbers. Agriculture is still, I think, one of our most important differentiating competencies. And if we've got an exogenous variable like weather that can beat about any strategy, we've got to think seriously about how we become, if you like, the food supply to the world. I mean, there is no doubt in my mind that food scarcity is going to be a driver of massive economic and social behavior.
You know what I can't understand? Well, perhaps it's not strange. They've just done a calculation that the temperature last year was 1.5 degrees up globally, right? Yeah. So now here's my question. When they signed that accord in Paris, how many ever years ago, intending to bring down
global warming temperature,
carbon emitting industries, global warming numbers, how did it happen that the number actually went up?
Because people, people just won't listen. Okay. I don't know. But it's a big deal. 1.5% is a big deal. It was like, that's the barrier of acceptability or something.
Yes, exactly.
I'm not an expert on these things. Anyway, it's heating up. We could do the bit of sun here in Gauteng, actually. All right. Yet again, a year ahead of us full of interesting challenges. See you next week.
Cool, man. See you next week.